Laudato Jesus Christus. This is the English program of Vatican Radio.
Hello and welcome to our half-hour English feature program. I'm Susie Hodges. Coming up on today's program, Pope and Ash Wednesday. Pope Benedict looks at today's solemn celebration of Ash Wednesday and urges the faithful to use the period of Lent for conquering the desert of our spiritual aridity, selfishness and materialism. Challenges of Lenten Message. We explore the Pope's Lenten message, and the Dominican Prior of Rome's San Clemente Church tells us why he finds this year's papal message so thought-provoking and challenging. Lenten Meaning and Memories. A Jesuit priest and journalist who comes from Chicago looks at the significance of this 40-day season of fasting and penance and reminisces about his own childhood memories of Ash Wednesday and Lent. And Spotlight on BBC series about Catholics. We talk to the producer and director of a new TV series by the BBC starting this week entitled Catholics, that looks at the complex reality of being Catholic in today's Britain. At his weekly general audience, Pope Benedict reflected on today's solemn celebration of Ash Wednesday that marks the beginning of the 40-day season of Lent. The Pope urged the faithful to meditate on Christ's word and example during Lent to conquer the desert of our spiritual aridity, selfishness and materialism. Emma McCarthy tells us more.
Lent is a time of change, of conversion, a time that pushes us to assume our responsibilities, a time for mature decisions, said Pope Benedict XVI, addressing a packed Paul VI audience hall here at the Vatican this Ash Wednesday.
The entire Christian community is invited to live this period of 40 days as a pilgrimage of repentance, conversion, and renewal. In the Bible, the number 40 is rich in symbolism. It recalls Israel's journey in the desert, a time of expectation, purification, and closeness to the Lord, but also a time of temptation and testing. It also makes Jesus' own journey in the desert as the beginning of his public ministry, a time of profound closeness to the Father in prayer, but also of the confrontation with the mystery of...
Speaking in Italian, the Pope also referred to the condition of the pilgrim church in the desert of the world and history, which, just like Jesus, is tempted by the devil with power, success, dominion. But, he said, even though the sky above us is obscured by the clouds of selfishness, misunderstanding and deception, the period in the desert can become a period of grace, because even from the hardest rock, God can bring forth the living water that refreshes and restores.
The Church's Lenten discipline is meant to help deepen our life of faith and our imitation of Christ in his Paschal mystery. In these 40 days, may we draw nearer to the Lord by meditating on his word and example and conquer the desert of our spiritual aridity, selfishness, and materialism. For the whole Church, may this Lent be a time of grace in which God leads us in union with the crucified and risen Lord, so the experience of the desert to the joy and hope brought by Easter.
On a lighter note, following his catechesis, Pope Benedict had a special greeting for members of the new ordinariate for Anglicans seeking full communion with the Catholic Church.
I offer a special welcome to the faithful of the personal ordinariate of Our Lady of Walsingham on the occasion of their pilgrimage to the See of Peter.
And before taking his leave of the Paul VI Hall, he was presented with a very special gift, a gold medal minted in his honour by the Junior Alpine Ski Champions. The Lenten period officially begins at sundown here in Rome, when, as per tradition, Pope Benedict XVI leads a solemn procession from the Church of St. Anselmo on the Aventine Hill to the Church of St. Sabina, where he celebrates the Eucharist with the distribution of ashes to penitents. I'm Emer McCarthy.
In his Lenten message for this year, Pope Benedict chose the theme, "Let us be concerned for each other, to stir a response in love and good works," that focuses in particular on the theme of charity. In this message, he speaks of the importance of being concerned not just for the physical well-being of others, but also for their spiritual well-being. In this latter context, Pope Benedict stresses the need for Christians to rediscover the practice of admonishing those who are committing a sin, saying, "We must not remain silent before evil." Father Terence Crotty is an Irish Dominican who is the prior at Rome's San Clemente Church. I began by asking him what Ash Wednesday and Lent mean for him.
You know, Lent for me causes a little bit of dread, in the sense that it's such a challenge, I suppose, to my normal life, that it's a season that, because it calls us to prayer, fasting, almsgiving and self-denial, can be, you know, for those of us who usually live our lives looking after our own comfort and pleasure, it's quite a challenge. And I suppose the traditions of Lent are, in that sense, always a bit of a danger of rebuke for me, I must say. But rather than saying rebuke, let's just say that it's a challenge.
Do you have any special memories or anecdotes concerning Ash Wednesday or indeed Lent? And also, can you tell us why you find it a moving and yet a solemn celebration?
I suppose the major memory for me of Ash Wednesday wouldn't be so much from my childhood, but a few years back I was chaplain in a school and we had a service of ashes. So you can imagine in the church 700 teenagers. And I gave a sermon on Ash Wednesday and made them realise, said to them that, you know, today you are going to look very stupid. And of course, these young people would be most concerned about their appearance. And so they had to wander around town with ashes on their forehead. And in fact, they were delighted to hear that, you know, in some sense, again, it was a challenge for them to look different, something different in their lives. So for me, that would be one of the hallmarks of Ash Wednesday, that memory. And this concrete symbol of difference, that something different is about to happen. And Ash Wednesday, therefore, I suppose, calls Lent into being in that sense, that because it's so different, because it's so concrete, with the ashes on the forehead, all its symbolism, all its challenge to look different, to be different, to not look your best that day, but to think of something else, is really a symbol of exactly what Lent is all about.
Now, in his Lenten message for this year, Pope Benedict focuses on charity particularly, and it has as its theme this message, "Let us be concerned for each other, to stir a response in love and good works." How thought-provoking did you find this papal message?
I thought, again, precisely the word challenge is exactly what this message is about. At one stage in the message, the Pope speaks about an aspect of charity being fraternal correction in the spiritual life of the Christian. And the message is really taken in its entirety. It's absolutely a fraternal correction by the Pope of Christians in general. I think it's very much classic Pope Benedict, in the sense that it's absolutely sterling. It's sterling steel in its message. And at the same time presented very beautifully, very thought-provokingly in various ways. But that aspect of fraternal correction, and at the end he speaks about the high standard, calling to live Christianity to a high standard. It's really, I think, quite revolutionary in its sense that it's the same quiet revolution that the Pope is always working towards in his messages.
Coming back to this issue of fraternal correction or not being afraid to admonish other Christians who are committing a sin, the Pope says he believes that this fraternal correction is an aspect of Christian life that's been quite forgotten. Would you agree? And if so, what are the reasons for this?
I would certainly think it's been quite forgotten. And I'd say, especially from my own point of view, coming from an Irish point of view, where our Christianity tends to be quiet and prayerful and in that sense, individual, most especially, I think, in our culture. But the Pope says that it's certainly a universal problem in the universal church, that we either are too caught up in ourselves or we're just too adapted to modern society to really see that there's a problem there. But what he also points to, and what's very interesting, is that he brings in the whole dimension of holiness, that Benedict has this vision of God. And you can see, I think, not to speak too much in depth about the Pope's own spiritual life himself, but he seems certainly to be a man who has himself had that conversion, and he wants to call others to conversion with it. So I think the problem is real, and the antidote that he gives is quite surprising, this call to fraternal correction and to encourage each other in the path to the search for holiness.
He also, of course, talks at quite length about urging the faithful to be concerned for one another and not to remain isolated and indifferent to the fate of others. Do you think we tend to be less concerned about others now because of the strong emphasis on individualism in our society today?
Sure. Well, individualism is, of course, to an extent, one of the great enemies that the Pope has set out during his entire pontificate to combat. And I think, speaking of his, for example, of his speech to the German Parliament, his famous speech last year, where he spoke about Europe living in a bunker, people living in a place without windows and without light. And really, that's because we're so closed in on ourselves. And this is what the Pope is warning against in this letter, in this message, is the whole idea of becoming too closed in on ourselves. Even when we're good Christians and we go to church, still to take on that extra dimension of looking outside. First of all, he says, he uses that phrase of looking towards, of thinking about, from the letter to the Hebrews. First of all, applied to Christ, that we consider, we think about Christ, and then to go on to think about our neighbours too. But again, it's that whole idea of looking outwards from ourselves.
And also, when it comes to this concern for others, the Pope says it isn't just for their physical well-being, but also their moral and spiritual well-being. I mean, because it's easier to focus, in a sense, on the first. You know, if you see somebody who's suffering from hunger, blatant poverty, it's easier to do that. And yet there's not so much, there's a reluctance, isn't there, to tackle the last two aspects.
Absolutely. Well, I suppose it goes with the fact that the primary sense in Christians is the sense of sight, that what we can see becomes very concrete to us, and what we can only perceive instinctively or spiritually remains secondary or outside in comparison to what we can see. So the physical is always primary for us. The Pope, I suppose, reminds us that in fact the spiritual is the more important, because it's what carries over into the next life. It's what really forms also the leaven in this life too. And I suppose when you think of St. John's Gospel in the fifth chapter there, Jesus heals a man who's been paralyzed for 38 years. And then he says to him, "Don't sin or something worse might happen to you," as if to say that serious sin is even worse than paralysis. So the Pope as well, along those lines, I think, is reminding us really that the spiritual life is the golden rod inside us that we have to care for and develop, even in primacy to the physical and the material.
Now, if I could ask you a personal question, what are you giving up for Lent?
Well, once upon a time, when I was at home, we asked my father that, and he said, "My left hand shall not know what my right hand is doing." Of course, we all laughed because that was an excuse for doing nothing at all, as far as we were concerned. So what will I give up for Lent? I will try and break my addiction to my morning coffee. And as well as that, I'll give up chocolate. But that's fairly easy for me because I haven't come across a lot of good chocolate in recent times. But I think the trying to give up the coffee will be quite a test enough for me, and I can say here and now that I'll probably fail.
I was speaking to Father Terence Crotty, Dominican priest from Ireland. Father Matthew Gamba is a Jesuit priest and journalist of Irish descent who grew up in the US city of Chicago. He talked to me about the symbolism of Ash Wednesday and reminisced about his own childhood memories of Lent. Can you reflect for us on what Ash Wednesday meant to you when you were a child growing up, and perhaps share with us some of your memories?
Grew up in the Chicago area, so usually Ash Wednesday hit around, in the heart of winter. And so it was kind of that cold, blustery, snowy season. and yet always the promise of Easter at the end, because our family would go away on vacation to somewhere warm for Easter week, either to Florida or out to the desert in Arizona. So for us, it was the beginning of really looking forward to Easter, but by way of Lent. And my parents very much celebrated the liturgical season at church, but also at home. So Tuesday night before Ash Wednesday, probably we'd have steak or beef of some kind. And then Ash Wednesday, everyone was up. We attended Catholic school, so the reception of ashes was incorporated into the daily life at the school. But it was a very solemn day, a very special day, a very significant day, and one that I think marks everyone, but certainly students at Catholic schools in the United States for their whole life.
Did you find, though, that people who weren't Catholics were rather baffled by this custom of putting ashes on the forehead?
I see that more and more these days because, interestingly enough, in the United States, there is a great interest on Ash Wednesday. I mean, our churches are packed to the gills, out the door, around the block in some places, down in the cities. And everyone gets their ashes and then proudly wears them all day. So it becomes a point of interest, and there's always articles about it and explanations about it. As a child growing up, you know, the whole family wore them. It was more of a contest to see how long you could keep your ashes on in the course of a day. And then my parents always tried to kind of explain the significance of things, what this really meant. And those words, you know, remember that thou art dust and unto dust thou shalt return. I can remember thinking those are solemn and serious words. I didn't quite always understand what they mean, but that grew over the years.
And as you say, that grew over the years. And how would you say your understanding of the significance of Ash Wednesday is now? What are your feelings about it?
There's always this great interest and a great sense of preparation. And as I said, at least starting Lent off on this very serious, somber, and yet interesting, I always find the liturgy of the day talks about this joyful season that the God has given us during Lent. And that's even in the Ash Wednesday liturgy, I believe, where, yes, it's marked by ashes and marked by this memory of our ultimate death, but it's ultimately joyful season preparing us for Easter. I'm always in my preaching trying to emphasize, yes, Lent, yes, the way of the cross, yes, the way to Easter and the resurrection.
Nonetheless, Lent is seen traditionally as a time for prayer, repentance, fasting, almsgiving. Mm-hmm. How do you try personally to live out that call?
Absolutely. The three pillars, prayer, fasting, and almsgiving, are essentially important. And as a priest, to try to teach and exhort people and explain it is one thing, but also have to do it if we're going to be preaching it, you know, walk the walk. So I really strive to pray more. A few years ago, a priest challenged all of us as priests to spend an hour in Eucharistic adoration. This was about 10 years ago. And I spent that whole Lent with 1 hour of Eucharistic adoration, and it really flowed into the rest of the year. And so that's something that I do every Lent, is really try to commit myself to that hour of Eucharistic prayer, and something that I will be doing this year. Operation Rice Bowl is a wonderful program that raises money for Catholic Relief Services. When I was at a college campus, the students really got involved in it, and we raised the most of any college campus that particular year. We were somewhere in the $5,000, which for college kids was big. And so I always love the Operation Rice Bowl. And then in terms of fasting, you know, it's always a kind of a season where we have to take a look at our appetites for food and drink and all kinds of things. And so I'm always on a diet. And so it helps us in that regard. I know it's not supposed to be fasting and dieting, but I think everyone takes it seriously. You know, in our family, we'd always try to be, you know, parents would challenge us, you know, to try to give up something and to help us. They really helped us. And I think parents can help their families to honor that privilege. And then at the end, again, the fasting yields to the feast of Easter. And so we have to keep that in mind.
So when you say your parents helped you to give up something, what sort of things were they suggesting?
They would let us decide, but then sort of, you know, they wouldn't try to tantalize us and help us. I remember one of my brothers, I'm from a family of five boys, and he gave up soda pop and really kept it all of Lent. And, you know, really, you know, my parents respected that. And I remember they bought him a big liter bottle of Coke on Easter Sunday just for him, you know. So I guess in that regard that, you know, that they honored what he had done. You know, he was like probably a 12, 13-year-old kid. So things like that, that you kind of fill your memory books of the season. It's a wonderful liturgical season.
That was Jesuit priest Matthew Gamba. What's
it like being a Catholic in today's British society? Finding the answer to that question is the main aim of a new TV series by the BBC that seeks to portray the complex reality of being Catholic and how this identity shapes people's lives. Starting on Thursday, February the 23rd, the series is called Catholics and is divided into three parts. The first part is about Catholic men called to the priesthood and was filmed at London's Allen Hall Seminary. One of the seminarians featured in the film was John Miller.
I started thinking about it really after I was confirmed. So when I was about 14, I started exploring the idea of a vocation and God's call in my life and when it would be appropriate for me to explore that in a deeper way by coming to seminary. I decided that after sixth form was the best time, that I wanted to give everything to God and my whole life and that see what he would do with me in those years.
The second film, Children, focuses on the children at the Catholic primary school in a village in Lancashire. Six of the children are preparing to make their first Holy Communion, and their teachers talk them through the steps.
Right, now the bread and the wine I've got today hasn't been blessed by Father, so it is just bread and wine.
It's going to taste the same next week, but it's going to be very, very different. Because something has happened to that in the Holy Mass. What, you tell me?
He's blessed it.
Father makes something special happen so that we as Catholics believe that we're actually receiving Jesus.
The third part is about Catholic women and was filmed at Westminster Cathedral in London.
We come here every Sunday for Mass and I try and come to daily Mass when I can, when it fits in with the kids.
Why do you feel the need to come every day? Because
I love going to Mass. It's part of my makeup, I guess.
Catholic school?
Catholic school, Catholic family, very strong Catholic identity.
The series Catholics is produced and directed by prize-winning documentary filmmaker Richard Alwyn. And he spoke to me about the message he is seeking to get across in this series.
It was the idea came from me, largely because I've been married to a Catholic for 25 years and have been sort of, you know, observing Catholicity, if you like, for so long. And it suddenly occurred to me that this is something I wanted to sort of explore as an identity. And there's been a precedent on the BBC for making trilogies about identity like this. They did three films called Jews, three films called Lefties, three films called Women. And I just sort of woke up one day and thought, hang on a second, it's obvious, isn't it? Why haven't they made three films about Catholics? And I thought it was important to, in terms of what the sort of the what was driving it, was to get behind all the headlines which kind of visit Catholicism in this country at least all the time. And if you go by those headlines, you just reduce the faith entirely. The headlines don't apply to the Catholics I know and live with and move amongst in this world. So the headlines are all about abuse and paedophilia and AIDS and contraception and all the sort of the news agenda. So I wanted to get away from that and simply ask the one question, so what's it like to be a Catholic? So it's as simple as that, to be perfectly honest.
And what did you find? What kind of replies did you get?
I think on the whole, on finds, it's a very tenacious identity, I think. People hang on to it, whatever they feel their ride through it has been, in a sense. People still identify themselves somewhere in relation to their kind of Catholic identity, to their Catholicity. We made one of the films was in the seminary here in London, where you have people who are, if you like, holy Catholic, well, WHO, holy. Catholicism is sort of incarnate in some senses. Every fibre of their being is determined by their faith. And then at the other end of the extreme, the other extreme, we found people who cling on to their Catholic identity and value it and feel that it's given them huge strengths in their life. I remember one woman said it gave her moral compass in the chaos of life. Even though she didn't practice any longer, she felt, you know, she felt very separate in some ways from from the church, I think, rather than from the faith. But her Catholicity, if you like, still remained very strong. And in a way, that's what I was sort of expecting to find. And I remember actually talking, and this might sound ridiculous, I remember talking to a priest very early on in the research period about what it is, what's at the heart of Catholic identity. And I mean by that going beyond matters of Mass and Eucharist and doctrine, And he said, well, if you really want to know, you ought to speak to my mate Brendan, I think he was called. He said he won't come into the church. He crossed the road rather than coming into the church. But he is more Catholic than virtually anyone else I know. And he meant that positively as well.
And did you find that many of the Catholics you talked to and filmed, that they felt that they were somehow set apart from mainstream society, that sense of being very different?
No, I don't think so. I think they feel slightly under siege. I think they feel a bit sort of wary of the media, which is sort of understandable, because the media has tended to only visit them through those headlines we talked about just now. But they probably do feel a little marginalised, a little understood, misunderstood, a little bedevilled, I think. Definitely, yeah. I think they're just sort of exhausted by being sort of fair game, I think, particularly in the media here.
Were you yourself surprised by some of the things that you saw and learnt during the course of the filming? Or was it, as you said, very much as you expected?
I was pretty much as I expected, in the sense that, as I say, my children have been brought up Catholic. I live with a Catholic, because obviously my family, my in-laws are Catholic, so I'm very, you know, the priests and the family, I'm very close to it from that point of view. I'm almost embarrassed to say one of the things which shocked me, not shocked me in a negative sense, surprised me, because it's so obvious, is that it was being with the seminarians and in the seminary, I was just so overwhelmed. And actually there's an elderly priest in the film we made in a rural parish in Lancashire, which was about childhood, really. I was just incredibly struck by the solidity and the presence of people's faith in their lives and how it determined absolutely every moment of what they did. Somehow that really impressed me in a way. I just hadn't felt it before, I suppose, or lived with it. So, yes, just the sort of full-timeness of it.
Was it a rewarding or moving experience doing this series?
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, it was extremely rewarding and very moving. Each of the films, which are very different, had their very moving moments. I think the film I made with women at the cathedral here at Westminster, the volunteers and the staff and the congregation, I found that very moving. The film's constructed around sort of encounters I have with the women there. And they're very revealing, they're very generous, they're very honest about their feelings, about their Catholicity. And I found them very moving. A lot of them had struggled, I think. The muck and chaos in life, you know, had certainly not, you know, passed them by. And it's always, you know, moving hearing people talking about how they cope and contain all that. There was a woman particularly I remember who'd been divorced and was the second marriage and felt she couldn't take communion any longer, but she was sort of all kind of getting on and sort of making the most of what she could in her life, and I found that all very moving. And I found the priest up in Lancashire extremely moving as well, who's in his 50th year of his ministry and passionate about the landscape and the people up there, and I found all that very touching as well.
Finally, if you had to sum up in one or two sentences, what does it mean to be Catholic today, what would you say? And is it true, that old saying, once a Catholic, always a Catholic?
I think that, yeah, I'm afraid I probably just default to cliches. I think that is true, once a Catholic, always a Catholic. I think the other one, which is actually a beginning of the children's film, and actually somebody says it in the women's film as well, and a woman in her late 70s says it, show me the child of 8 or 7 or whatever it is, the Jesuit maxim, show me the child of 8 and I'll show you the man. I think that's true. How would I sum up Catholic identity? I think it's a very creative identity, and I think it's a very responsible identity in some ways. I think it's about thinking about the way the world fits together. The children in this tiny village in the middle of nowhere are aware that they're part of a much wider world, even though they might think that, you know, there's nothing beyond the end of their lane, because they're constantly being drawn attention to that in their school.
I was speaking to Richard Orwin, director of the new BBC TV series Catholics. Well, that's all for today from me, Susie Hodges, here at Vatican Radio's English programme. But we'll be on the air again at the same time tomorrow. And you can always find our programmes on the internet at www.vaticanradio.org. Laudato Jesus Christus.